What is up, crew? It's Wednesday. Time for a little Next Generation where we talk youth shooting sports and grown-up shooting sports, I guess, too, to an extent, because a lot of the things cross over and apply. Let me get the camera kicked on here. There we go. All right. So, yeah, we are live on YouTube, and we are simulcasting over on gunchannels.com, which is better than YouTube. So let me get the link for the YouTube guys over there. There's the link to Gun Channels. It's a great place to hang out. It doesn't cost anything to join. A lot of creators over there, a lot of different things to do, hang out in lobby chats, participate in your favorite shows. The chat features are a little bit better than what they are on YouTube, especially as of late. It's really hard to get links to post here on YouTube for some reason or another. But anyway, speaking of gun channels, let's see who we have over on that side. It looks like a pretty full house. Hopefully we can keep up with the chat. Gear Reports over there, and looks like Pants is there, Flippy Blue, and PBR Clay, Rife Moon, Cycle, all hanging out over there. And what's up, Sean? I see you, bud. Over here on the YouTubes. Pop out my little chat here. My wife is in the house. So, hello, honey. Grim's out there. Gunpowder Beauty and George, Casey, Mohawk Boy, Midnight Range TM in the house. Patriot, Rich, RL, Sean, Double T, just to name a few. If I can get my chat back. There we go. Thank you, YouTube, for working right. So, yeah, the topics. Topic for tonight, I did had a coach training. Whoops. Had a little coach training that I had to do this last weekend. And every time I do those, things come to mind, which is, what prompted the topics for tonight. And what we're going to talk about is foreman technique, how to teach those. We're going to talk about bad habits and myths when it comes to foreman and technique. But basically, you get into these coach trainings and you go in, and it's not really about the 4-H training. It's not necessarily about teaching someone to be, an Olympic shooter or even an Olympic shooting coach. So you get these people that come in. And what we do is we teach the basics of foreman technique, the way that, science tells us, years of practice and innovation and things like that tell us that, what you need to be doing as far as foreman technique. And inevitably you get people in there that have, they've shot their whole lives, be it rifle, pistol, shotgun, archery, whatever it is, they've shot their whole lives. And they do it a certain way, and they want to teach that certain way, even though that certain way may not fall in line with, shooting sports canon, maybe. So anyway, that's what we're gonna talk about a little bit, is that sort of thing. Let me run it through the panel. Got a pretty good panel tonight, so let's run it through the panel. Let those guys say hi. Too Hottie, how are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. And Mr. Tardot is with us. How are you, Tar?
Pretty good. Thanks for the invite. Just got back from an Army surplus run. And I actually had a video yesterday I did on revolver technique and how to not blow your fingers off. So check that out, too.
There you go. We're talking about foreman technique. That is that's definitely one of them. Mr. Rick in the house. Rick's life, I see it. How are you, Rick?
All right. Thanks for the invite. It's good to be here, and I made sure my show ended 5 minutes early to make sure I was here on time.
Right. And I haven't been able to get it in on that show. It was shot last week, and then everything going on this week, and trying to get ready and kind of back in the swing of things. But I was actually talking with Too Hottie early. It seems like a really cool show, and you know, working with the kids and stuff like that. I mean, there may be something with my training and whatever, you know, working with disabilities and stuff. So I really would like to get in on that. Hopefully one week.
You're welcome anytime.
You bet. Matt with 50 Caliber Karma.
I feel like I should tell everybody that putting enormous mud tires on your lifted pickup isn't fooling anybody when your truck is spotless.
Yeah, you've noticed that too.
And that's my intro today, because I've just been dealing with heavy truck wheels all day and I am in pain.
Right. Right. G is in the house with us. How are you, G?
Hey, thanks for being back.
Bet. And Gizzard is here with us.
Hey, Glover. Thanks for the invite.
You bet, man. Anytime. So let me jump out to the chat here. Maybe boring for just a minute. See what we got, if anything. Cycle Camp said there's some bad buffering. So yeah, if anybody else is buffering, let me know. Let me grab. Let me grab a link here. I got someone wanting a link. There we go. Got that out. And now let's see over here on the YouTube side. Yep. Not a lot as far as topics. So yeah, we'll get started. And you know, one of the first things that I want to talk about is actually the thing that came up in that training. We were talking about archery. We were talking about ways to identify when a kid is not on target, you know, what they could be doing wrong by, you know, if the arrow is low or high or off to the left or off to the right. And, you know, one of the common things to look for is if that arrow is way off to the left or way off to the right. Same can happen with a firearm, by the way. But if it's way off to the left or way off to the right, it could be, very commonly could be, that they're using a non-dominant eye for that. So, you know, if they've got that string lined up just right, like I would be right eye, so the string would be more or less in line with my right eye, same with a rifle stock or something like that. If I was to use my left, then that's going to throw my sight picture completely out of whack. And I had a guy that wanted to argue a little bit that he shot best with both eyes open with archery, and he taught to shoot archery with both eyes open. My response to him with that was that it's probably best to try to teach sound technique and principle. And then if that kid has an issue, work with them to determine, you know, what they can do. If it's a situation where you find that, you know, they just can't get it done with the, you know, utilizing the sound principles of form and technique, and they need to shoot with both eyes open and they shoot better with both eyes open, then by all means, at that point, let them shoot with both eyes open. This translates to me a little bit, because me and the youngest daughter both had this issue being more precision minded as shooters. With shotgunning, any of your shotgun instructors are going to tell you both eyes open. You know, you want to have that field of view. You want to be able to process all of that information. And that's just something that we've never been able to do. We shoot much, much better if we close, or at least kind of squint that non-dominant eye just a little bit. For me, it's more of a squint. I don't want to say I keep it closed completely. So I'm no stranger to deviating from those principles of sound, form, and technique. However, I don't teach it that way. I teach both eyes open. And then if we are into a situation, again, where, you know, that kid is just having a hard time and can't get it done, then we may go into, hey, try this, you know, try squinting that eye, or try leaving both eyes open, like the guy was talking about with archery. and see where it goes from there. So with that, I'm gonna kind of run through the panel here and just get a consensus of how I'm wondering when you're shooting like that and with shotgun, archery, pistol, rifle. I know that we may be dealing with different techniques, but I'd like to run it through the panel here. And what I'd like to know is and you can pick one or you can talk about all. It's completely up to you. But do you use both eyes or do you use just the dominant eye or do you squint?
I go with like the Jedi idea. I just blindfold the kid.
Yeah. Put on the right. Blast helmet. Yeah. Put the blast shield down on the X-Wing helmet or whatever. Yeah. That would work too. Pant says, he was buffering out there, but he refreshed and it took care of it. Yeah. So if you're on the gun channel side, refresh and hopefully that'll help. RL out there says he's cross-eyed dominant, and he tries to use both. So, yeah, if you're cross-eyed dominant, that's tough to get over that. So,
yeah, I have that same issue. I'm cross-dominant, right-handed, yeah. Dominant left eye.
So how do you deal with that?
You want to talk shotgun or what do you want to talk?
Your dealer's choice.
All right. I have always shot shotgun best with my left eye. Just cock my head over as far as I can and try to get a good sight picture.
But you actually crawl the comb. You're actually, instead of being in line, you actually crawl the comb. Right.
Yeah. In my limited trap shooting. I have been at the range and had old timers, you know, give me the advice that, you know, you need to start learning how to shoot with both eyes open. And it's a tough thing to do when you're used to closing that one eye or squinting that one eye or whatever.
Right.
But I'm sure with enough practice, it can be done, you know. And your whole thing on, you know, teaching it a certain way in the beginning makes sense. And then altering that on a person to person basis based on their performance and what you're seeing out of them makes complete sense to me.
Yeah. Because that's another part of the conversation here we'll get into later. But, you know, the reasoning behind trying to teach it according to principle first is to not create bad habits. If you just go out there willy-nilly, then there's the potential of creating bad habits. I know before I got into 4-H and shooting sports and coaching and all that stuff, like most people out there, rural background, you know, out squirrel hunting or, you know, shooting cans off a fence post or whatever, and there wasn't a lot of instruction to it. And so you kind of learn, you know, grandfathers and fathers and what have you, and you kind of learn safety and mechanics and manipulation, and then that's it. Here, run with it. And because of that, you know, I developed bad habits, and then once I progressed up, I realized, wow, I've got these bad habits. They're hard to break. And to this day, I find myself wanting to revert back, and have been in the 4-H and coaching and stuff for years now. I find myself reverting back a lot of times. I've got to make a conscious effort. It seems like almost with every trigger pull or every release, you know, pull or whatever, I have to make a conscious effort to make sure that all of my form and everything is the way it needs to be. Tardot, what about you?
Well, I mean, for me personally, I'm right-handed, right eye dominant. So, I mean, archery, it's all lining it up straight with my right eye, squaring up correctly, having that thumb up next to my eye, everything else with pistol. Now pistol's one I tend to just hold center. I don't try to hold to the right. Mm. I do try to use both eyes with pistol. Now I have known some cross-eyed dominant people that have actually tried to do offhand shooting and pretty much have trained themselves. And they were pretty successful at training themselves at shooting in their offhand. But that meant most times when they're at the range or out hunting or whatever, almost every time they were always shooting offhand just to make sure they were comfortable with it.
Right. Now on the archery, do you, is your non-dominant eye closed or do you actually leave that open?
No, I usually close it. I usually stick to the cannon on that and keep my eye closed. And that's more habit for some reason. I just have that habit of that eye right. closes.
Well, I mean, it's good to have a good habit, I guess. Yeah, that really threw me when he talked about that, because that's odd, especially with archery. With pistol, your hands tend to move to your dominant eye just a little bit. So it's not nearly an issue with, and obviously with rifle or shotgun, you've got that comb. So, I mean, you've got an actual, you know, something there that sort of prevents you from seeing the sights correctly. But with archery, you don't. I mean, it's real easy to open that eye. And, you know, when I do that, I just, my sight picture, what I'm seeing is just foreign to me. It's really weird and uncomfortable.
I found archery and even some others, when you have both eyes open, it does make it a little bit harder to focus on.
Right. Yeah. Aim. Yeah, exactly. Somebody was jumping in here. Who was it?
I was going to just throw out a quick question when it comes to the, you know, the cross dominance. So my deal was, I was really weird. With being left eye dominant, I could only close my right eye. So people told me that if you're right-handed, you should shoot with your right eye. And I had to actually sit and work and figure out what muscles it took to keep my left eye closed when I had my non-dominant eye open.
Well,
and what would you say on something like that? Would you say just
awesome.
Shoot with your dominant eye? Or?
No, it's a great question. Whoever told you that needs to be flogged. We need to send them to Singapore for 50 lashes, because they don't know what they're talking about. You always shoot to your dominant eye. It's a lot easier to retrain a trigger finger than it is an eye. And that's because of focus and a bunch of other issues that you can't train. You really can't do anything with. What they should have told you is to just learn to shoot left-handed if you're left eye dominant. That sort of wasted a lot of time with you, unfortunately.
No matter how humiliating it is to shoot left-handed.
Yeah. Those guys I've worked with, they've learned to shoot left-handed from being right-handed, but they even said it's uncomfortable, especially in the beginning, because your instinct is to go with the right hand, and it's not so much hurts, it's more of it.
Are you guys left-hand shaming me? Is that what this is?
We're trying to.
You live in a free country where you have rights.
Does it always have to be about unite strike? Jeez.
It really does. So, you know, I can shoot pretty well either way. But when I shoot left-handed, and I have to do that because sometimes I have to show position or do things. When I shoot left-handed, I always shoot left eye. And I've noticed that I don't have the sight. I don't have the capability to focus and stuff quite in my left eye that I do in my right. I do notice that. And I know I don't shoot nearly as good left-handed in left eye as I do right-handed in right eye, obviously, because that's where the dominance lies. So I know how uncomfortable it can be doing that. But if I can get used to being right eye, right hand, get used to being able to switch hit more or less, then, I mean, it can be done for anybody out there. One of the big things especially with archery, and it's not a huge thing now, and even to an extent with firearms, but one of the big things when I've seen this before, is parents will know that their kid is right hand, left eye. And they'll do exactly what Hottie is talking about. They'll teach and they'll push to use their right eye because, and like I said, it was once a problem more than now, but it still is, because left-handed equipment, left-handed bows, left-handed rifles, left-handed shotguns, are just not as prevalent and easily found and options available and things like they are in right-handed for whatever reason. And, you know, that said, it has gotten, like I said, a whole lot better over the years, and it continues to improve and get better. We see a lot more ambidextrous stuff and ambidextrous features. A lot of your bows are going to, you know, center shot, where you can set them up, you know, either way, either side, and some things like that. Let me bring Rick in here. Rick may have a a little bit of a perspective on this. I know he's had to switch up, I think he said.
Yes.
Which hands he uses and stuff in the past. Okay. So.
When I went for my very first lesson to shoot, and my instructor, we done the eye dominance test, and I'm left-handed and I'm right eye dominant. So what she taught me to shoot left-handed, and what I would have to do was cock my head to the side so I could line it up, but I also put masking tape, because I was wearing my glasses, I put masking tape over the left lens, block out that eye, because I can't
black it out. Sure.
I can't close. I can squint my right eye, but I can't squint my left eye. I can't do it.
Absolutely right.
So then when I had the accident at work where I tore up my left hand, then I had to learn to shoot right-handed. So I went through lessons again, and you know I can line it up right-eyed, right arm, you know, right-handed, right eye, no problem. You know, but occasionally I will want to squint my right eye and use my left. I don't know why, but it doesn't happen often. But I've tried shooting rifles and shotguns. So I have a 22 rifle and a shotgun. I have to throw them up to the left. I have to throw them up to my left shoulder. I cannot hold it right-handed. I've tried. I just can't do it. You know? Right. So the shotgun, I just sort of aim and hope for the best. The 22, I put a red dot on it. Then I can hit the target with my left eye. Or when I went to my cousin's house over the summer, he had some rifles with scopes on them. Using the scope, I can hit the target with my left eye. You know, even though I'm right eye dominant.
Mm-hmm.
But without a scope, I can't do it.
Right.
You know, because I'm looking down the barrel with my left eye, and I'm missing it because I'm actually seeing the target with my right.
Yeah.
Both eyes open, you know.
Right.
So I'm hitting the target to the left.
And I totally hear what Rick is saying when it comes to just the awkwardness of switching up sides, because I you know, when I found out I was left eye dominant, I did try. But for me, it's like, you know, I grew up playing baseball and I was always right-handed, and, you know, I can throw the 70 mile an hour, you know, fastball right-handed. And I can, if I want to try to throw a ball left-handed, it's going in the bleachers. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I never had the time, had the training, had the amount of, you know, all that and energy to put into it to switch over properly, it sounds like to me.
Yeah, right. Well, it looks like there's quite a few people out there in the chat and everything that are cross dominant, which is interesting. And I find for whatever reason, year in and year out, it seems like there's more and more kids that are cross dominant. It's interesting. It seems like it used to not be that way, and it's become more prevalent. Now, Cycle Camp on the Gun Channel side.
It's the Me Too generation.
I guess so. Everybody needs to be cross dominant now. I guess that's the new
parents indoctrinating their kids.
It's the new wind. It's the new wind. Like, oh, it's because I'm cross eye dominant. That's why I'm. Oh, it's because I'm cross eye.
Yeah, right, right.
And Clover, can I ask one quick question just to piggyback off of one thing that Rick said. So Rick was saying that, you know, he was, I think he's the opposite of me. He's right eye dominant. And he could not keep the other one closed while having his non-dominant eye open or vice versa. Right. Is that common for people who are cross dominant to only be able to keep one eye closed and have the other eye open?
I don't think that's common, but I run into a lot of kids that have a hard time closing one eye or the other.
Okay.
You know, but I wouldn't necessarily say that's common. No.
Okay.
Now,
because I actually sat down one afternoon and sat there for a good couple hours just winking and moving my eyebrow and finding all the little muscles in my in my left eye so that I could keep it closed and then shoot out of that non-dominant eye that I was being told I should shoot out of since I was right-handed.
Yeah.
Well, if you, I was able to teach myself, but
yeah.
You blame the schools. They don't teach winking anymore.
That's right. Yeah, that's probably considered sexual harassment nowadays. Yeah, to wink at somebody. So you got to be real careful. At yeah, that's horrible. Anyway, Cycle Camp. This is interesting. So I'm going to hit on it for a minute. I know Cycle Camp does a lot of trapping stuff, and I mean he's breaking with Canon here big time. But I mean this is sort of what I fall into this camp, even though I don't teach it. I fall into this camp. He says that a lot of shotgunners use glasses that fog out the non-dominant eye, which would be sort of, fogging it out would be sort of like, I guess, like squinting, where you've got a little bit of light or whatever going on there.
Like where I said, I use tape on my glasses. Yeah,
right. But that's weird considering that, we are taught to instruct and everything that you use both eyes. And he says he finds that when it shoots trapped, if he picks up the bird with his left eye, or with his non-dominant eye, he says, if he picks up the bird with his non-dominant eye, that he tends to track the bird, I guess is what he's getting at, with that non-dominant eye, and he misses. And he also says he tends to lift his cheek off the comb, off the stock as well, if he uses that left eye. And that would make sense because if you're right-handed and you're using your opposite eye, if I'm right-handed and I'm tracking with this eye, then I'm not tracking with my right eye and I'm not tracking with the barrel. So it would make sense that I would want to pull off of the comb. So, he's talking about some really good technique out there. Clay's got an interesting one. He says, can you put a red dot on a bow? You probably can. I've got a laser on my bow, but I mean, it's only good for like the exact yardage you set it up at. And even then it's kind of hard to hold that bow and hold that laser steady. So, I'm sure a red dot would work the same way if you could find the mounting apparatus to get it set up properly. Continuing on through, who we got here? Matt is next up.
Okay, so for shotguns, rifles, pistols, and I couldn't tell you about archery. I haven't shot a bow in 17 years. I just sort of not quite squint, but sort of half close my right eye. So it's not quite squinted, but it's sort of defocused, and that's how I shoot because I'm left-handed, left eye dominant, as you know, because you've watched my videos and you're a great supporter of mine. And so I just sort of defocus the right eye and shoot that way.
So you've got just enough. Because it's kind of sort of the same way with me too. With shotgun, it's not necessarily true with rifle, especially precision rifle. But so, is your non-dominant open mat just enough that you catch movement more or less?
I do catch movement, and I can sort of see everything. It's just like when you first wake up before you rub the sleep out of your eyes, and everything's just sort of fuzzy, like that.
It's kind of like Cycle Camp was talking about. It's kind of foggy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like having those foggy glasses, but I just, do it on my own instead of spending money on that.
Right. Yeah. Understandable. G, what about you?
I was going to say, I'm not sure exactly who we're talking to because there's lots of different aspects to this or whatever, but I would say a lot of the stuff you're talking about when you talk about technique and like, would you call it canon or whatever? I hear you. I mean, there's definitely that aspect, but that's almost nerding out. So I'm going to say if you're talking to a kid or you're, teaching kids who are going to be shooting competitively or at least trying to pursue the hobby a little bit, get better, then, every time they go to the range, they want to get a little bit better. That's one thing. But I end up going to the range more, at least for me, with kids that are just going out to go to the range recreationally occasionally, right? And that's where I think I would be overwhelming them if I tried to give them too much of this. So I just wanted to put the brakes on and go to sometimes we just want to let a kid or a new shooter have some fun and shoot. Now, if they and let them figure out, because that's the other thing is it's all our interface. It's our human interface with this machine. So we're all a little bit different. What might work perfect for me because of my eyes and my hands and my arms and whatever is not going to work for some little kid or somebody else. So kind of give them some direction, but then let them shoot. And it's only bullets, right? And the worst that's happening is they're practicing what doesn't work for them. But for something like a shotgun, I mean, rifle, I guess, a little bit more by the book. Pistol, you want to be safe or whatever. But with shotgun, I find it impossible, really, to try to teach someone unless it's like a step-by-step, here's how you attack that bird for competition or something. So you want consistency. But for just a regular person, especially if you're getting ready to go hunting where the birds are going to come from all over and be crazy, I'd rather them trying to just get familiar with it. And once they're familiar and comfortable and they start asking questions, then I guess I would get to what you're asking. Like, you know,
yeah, right. No. What we're talking about, you're right. What we're talking about is, I mean, they've already been out and they've had fun. And I mean, you know, they want to improve. They want to get better. There's, you know, there's that aspect going on of it. It's not
okay. Like once they want to know, like, what am I doing wrong? Then, yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And yeah, you're right. With shotgun, it's a whole different ball of wax with shotgun. Shotgun is real reactionary. And to me, that's where some of the fundamentals and the principles, you know, come into play with it a lot, is because, you know, it's just a reaction. I shoot better, you know, from a low ready than I do from a high ready, for example. And I'm pulling that shotgun, you know, I'm having to pull it up from, you know, what, 2 foot, 3 foot, you know, to be able to get on that bird. And
but it's like you're familiar with that, so it's like out of place if you already had it staged. Like that would be uncomfortable. So that's exactly get to that level of like what's comfortable for you, now adjust it. But that's right. It's a good topic for a show, because coaching is way tougher than just shooting.
Right. Gizzard, bring you in here.
Well, I'm right-handed and I'm right-eye dominant, but problem I run into a lot of times is my left eye is stronger than my right eye.
Wow.
So a lot of times I'm trying to focus in and trying to, and I'm shooting with bifocals on top of everything else. Wow. Trying to see that front sight and I just can't quite get it in focus. And sometimes I have to shift my left eye over just so I can catch it and then switch back over real quick. So, you know, sometimes you got to do some adjusting. It gets worse as I got older. When I was younger, I never wore glasses, never had that trouble.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, that's not just an age thing. I mean, that can happen with, you know, with kids as well. I mean, you can have your sight and the way your eyes work from, you know, age 5 to 8 can change. And then from age 10 to, you know, teenager, 16 can change again. You know, your sight could degrade, you know, whatever, where it's genetic or, you know, you've got some kind of degenerative disease or whatever's going on. That can happen. We see kids all the time with glasses, so we know that there's something going on with their, obviously, with their eyes and their sight. Sarge is in here. You want to jump in on this, Sarge? Did you get the topic?
It looks like we're talking about teaching new people how to shoot, and sounds like we're talking about teaching ourselves how to shoot.
A little bit.
I'm right-handed, left-eye dominant. Rifle, I can still shoot right-handed. My right eye is good enough that I can do it pretty well. I can do it very well with a red dot or a scope. I can do pretty well open sights. But and what we're just talking about as far as bifocals, I have to wear bifocals at 38 years old. I was they finally diagnosed the cataracts that I was probably born with that affected my vision my whole life, and they corrected it almost all the way. But I do have to wear bifocals. You're instantly farsighted when you have cataract surgery. So it is a little bit of a challenge. And if you really want to challenge yourself, start learning to shoot a pistol with both eyes open and learning to shoot with the opposite hand, opposite eye, and really start practicing. So,
Right. Now, bullseye out there. Let's see, what do we got? Doug is saying you can take the front sight off your shotgun. It says you shouldn't be using it unless the target is standing still. And that's pretty much true. I mean, that eye, if form is correct, and that dominant eye should be in line with the barrel, and pretty much what you see is what you get. If you've got your lead and other things are right. Then Bullseye up here said, he said that he thinks our parents and grandparents are worse teachers, because they really had no formal training themselves, And then there was one other thing he said. Oh, he was asking how many times that you overhear parents telling the kids the wrong info. And yeah, I mean, I hear that a lot, and there's a lot of different reasons for that. Be it that that's the way they did it, or that's the way they were taught. Or like I said, it gets into sometimes into equipment things. I mean, I've actually overheard them going, no, that, you know, he's going to shoot that bow or that whatever right-handed because we're not going out and buying a left-handed, whatever it was. And, you know, can the kid learn, can you learn to shoot it and have fun? Yes. Are you ever going to be as good as you would be otherwise? Likely, no. So, moving on, another thing, because we've talked about that pretty well, and this can actually fall into play in several scenarios, whether it's competition shooting, or even in self defense, with grown ups if you carry. And that is, that's shooting from trigger reset. That's one thing that, I hear people go, well, they could actually come all the way off that trigger in a smooth fashion and then come all the way back on it every single time. Whereas with me and teaching it, you want that reset. As soon as it's able to, that trigger resets, you stop. Your finger's on the trigger, it's in the same exact place, and you go again. So what I want to ask and kind of run through the panel now is, typically, how do you shoot? Do you pay attention to that reset when you shoot, or do you just get out there and bang away? Hottie?
Sorry about that. I do my best to shoot off a reset. Pistol and rifle, shotgun, not so much, because I'm not, even when I'm out shooting trap, I'm shooting 870. I'm not shooting a over under or anything like that.
And if you got to pump it, it don't matter anyway.
Right. So, I'm pretty much strictly shooting off a reset.
Right. Do you find that you really have to concentrate on that? Because I know I do. You really got to think about it.
In terms of not taking your finger all the way off the trigger?
Yeah.
For me, not really. It kind of comes natural. Whatever platform I find myself on, after I learn the trigger and learn the clicks that I need to feel, it comes pretty naturally to not come off the trigger.
Right. Because I know with me, that's we talk about bad habits, and that's a bad habit. It's a bad habit I've got. It's one of the ones that I have to literally be thinking about it. It's almost a conscious decision to stay on that trigger and work the reset. Tardot, what about you?
I'm just like you. I've got to think about it when I do it. And the obvious point is the faster I try to shoot, the less likely I'm going to stay on reset. I'll start pulling off as I let go of the trigger.
I think I do better the faster I shoot.
Well, and see, I do it because I have to think about it, especially, when I take like my SIG 2022 out and I'm shooting that, I've got to let it slowly and think about it as I'm doing it. And then it's gradually I can start speeding up and I'll start catching it. But if I go in and I'm just trying to do some rapid fire real quick, then yeah, I'll lose it real quick.
Now, Philo out there has an interesting take on this. He said he used to shoot from a reset, but recently an instructor taught him to reset during recoil, and it's a lot faster. So, that's an interesting concept. Because what are you going to do during reset time, right? Kenneth says reset don't work with his flintlocks. And that's all they're allowed in California. So, yeah, I get you, man. I feel for you. Sarge, what do you think about the trigger reset thing? You there? Are you muted?
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my fault. Yeah, I definitely do try to shoot from a trigger reset, and probably what you were talking about, that the faster you shoot, the better you do. That once you get into your shooting rhythm where you can feel that reset click and then go right back and fire the next shot, is probably when you're the most accurate. But if I'm not focused, I will start taking my finger off that trigger, but I definitely try to shoot from reset.
Yeah, it's a bad habit. I mean, even, you know, from an early age where you're playing with Nerf guns or cap guns or whatever. I mean, and it all has to do, I mean, you teach the kids or you teach whoever, you know, one of the rules is keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to fire. And I mean, that, I guess maybe that translates or what over into, you know, they do fire and then they feel the need to come off of it until they have to fire again. But, you know, if you're on the range, the command to fire or whatever has been given, and you're putting multiple rounds down range, then, I mean, obviously that's not the case. I mean, I say work the reset. Another thing with me, and that's important when you get the kids down there and for them to work that reset, is to slow things down. If they have to focus on that reset and think about it, and I'm the same way. Even if I could be firing a round a second, even two rounds a second. And, you know, if I'm focused on that, working from that trigger reset, it's almost like I'm firing in slow motion. It really doesn't seem like I'm burning up near the time. Seems like I'm burning up way more time, I guess it would be, than what it would appear. So, Rick, what about you?
When I was taught to shoot left-handed, I shot the reset. It came natural after she explained it to me. When I mm-hmm. went to right-handed, like you, I got to think about it, even to this day. I really got to think about it. Otherwise, I'll just take my finger off. And unfortunately, if I don't think about it, either I take my finger off, or when it gets to the reset, I double tap.
Oh,
you know right. what I mean? So,
yeah, get it too fast.
Yeah.
Right. Now, what you're saying is you're not naturally right-handed. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm left-handed. And okay. Unfortunately, I'm still shooting right-handed because even after my left hand got repaired, it's not strong enough.
Sure.
To hold the gun anymore.
Yeah. And that certainly could be a problem. I mean, that kind of ties into what we talked about earlier. What if you're cross dominant and then you stick to that cannon of, you know, you shoot to the dominant eye? Well, okay. That's where all the uncomfortableness can come into play because you may not have the finger dexterity or the feeling, in that non-dominant hand. And then so you end up with what we're talking about now. And there's a method to my madness. There's a reason that these two topics kind of come together like that is, you follow canon one way, and then here we are into a problem because we're shooting non-dominant hand and we're not able to work trigger reset. So, Matt, what do you say?
No, I don't actually own any striker fired guns or anything that really has a trigger reset as such. I have a 1911 and a handful of revolvers. So it's never really been a huge concern of mine. I'm sure, you know, if I ever get around to getting a Glock or anything, it will become a concern. It's something I think about, but it has not yet.
Right. Right. Well, there you go.
And that was something I was going to say too, is if you got somebody who shoots a lot of revolvers, it's going to be a different situation because you'll usually get a longer reset. Or if you're doing single action, you actually have to go through the actions of putting it in
place. You got to be real careful on the double actions. If you don't let it go to full reset, some of them will lock up.
Right.
A little bit.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. G, what about you?
Well, again, to put it in context, we're talking about teaching kids, correct?
Yeah, for the most part, but you know, not necessarily. I mean, that's one of the reasons we, you know, brought Rick in and you know, I mean, it could be grown ups, it could be, you know, having to switch later on. So not necessarily. That's what I'm saying.
I grew up with not even knowing what reset was. Like you just said, there wasn't a striker fire, so there wasn't really reset. Whenever I first started shooting Glocks, that I learned about reset, and like a lot of people, once you know about it, you're all about it. I stopped using reset with the Masada Yub class, where he gets into what do you call it? Like your automatic body responses to stress and the mittens instead of gloves kind of concepts,
right?
And idea that trying to do something as I'm trying to say delicate as a reset, it wouldn't be applicable for stress. So I typically don't think about reset so much anymore. The other reason I don't like reset is because it's not a characteristic of a firearm. It's a characteristic of some models of some, and like you guys are talking about, some of them are, it's more pronounced, or some of them it could literally be a deterrent. Like if you don't pay attention to it, or if you try to go too quick with the trigger, you're got a dead trigger. Anyway, so I typically don't like it, but there are some rifles, like you say, and there's some pistols for just accuracy. You want to know where that reset is, because it's basically like having a set trigger. So I want to be aware of it, but it's one of those things I think for teaching a new person or a kid, I wouldn't even bring it up until they were getting good and started asking more specific questions about the gun and maybe asked, hey, is there a difference? And, you know, and what's this reset I heard about? Then I'd start explaining it. And yeah, you can definitely ride a reset and shoot quickly. So if you're shooting plates or something, if you're not riding a reset, then you're doing it wrong, right? But again, under stress or something, or somebody just wanting to enjoy themselves, I don't really care if they're trigger slapping. I mean, for marksmanship, it's a bad idea, but for just playing, shoot a lot.
Right. Now, Mohawk boy out there said he's never thought about trigger reset. And I guess he needs to add that to his list of stuff to work on. So, yeah, I think if you, you know, if you have semi-autos that, you know, especially striker fires, then, yeah, knowing where that reset is and being familiar and comfortable with those can certainly help. Cycle Camp.
Action only revolvers, I'll have it too sometimes.
Yeah. Cycle Camp over there says, or no, it was Clay over there actually on the Gun Channel side, says that this is important to remember is, to try to sync the breathing with your trigger reset and pull. You don't want to be taking a breath, obviously, in the middle of all of that. That's gonna throw that off. So you know, while you're pulling the trigger, rather. So
Clay's in California, so he uses sort of a yoga technique for shooting that I don't think we're all gonna go with.
Probably he's on and pulls the trigger or something. Yeah.
If you're in the right chakra mindset.
Right. And John says there's always a level of stress, so it depends on the individual level. And that's true. I mean, I know I've seen some kids, I've seen some adults that, you know, you take them out to shoot and they enjoy it. I've got a friend that's that way. You go out and he sweats and his heart rate gets elevated and it's, you know, I'm not real sure what you would call that condition, but it's almost like he's, you know, and he enjoys it. He owns guns and everything else, but it's almost like it's shooting is stressful for him. It's a really weird situation. So, yeah, again, we get back into the breathing and, you know, trying to be cool and calm and collected and focused and all those good things. Gary, bring you in real quick. What do you say?
Well, I only own 3 striker fired guns. I didn't really concentrate on it too much, but I find I do shoot in the reset most of the time. Maybe naturally because I have small hands and short fingers and I tend to keep from going too far forward if I don't have to, because then I lose track of my thumb on the back of the gun. That being said, much like Rick, I do have occasions, especially on 9mm, where I have double tapped it quite by accident. So that's one thing you got to be careful of.
Right. Yeah, definitely. So let me scroll through the chats here one last time.
I was going to say, I went to IDPA practice when I was up in Michigan with my dad. And I noticed that really brought that into mind, because we were going through and you realize once you start, you know, you're talking about your friend that would sweat and everything else, he goes shooting. Mm-hmm. Well, I realized once you get running and you're doing that much activity and shooting, you will have that. If you haven't practiced it, you'll have that habit of jumping off the trigger.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he don't have to be running. We're talking about just standing at a bench or something, and it's very, very strange with him. Yeah, so I think we've killed that pretty well for the evening. Pretty good conversation about those two things. And like I said, they tie in together to a certain extent. We're dealing with eye dominance and hand dominance. So, by the way, I do have a video on eye hand dominance. It's an old one, but feel free to check that out if you want. I'm sure that it's probably got some negative comments on the quality and whatnot, but the message is on point, if nothing else. So, let's run it through the room here. And while I'm running through the room, I'm going to be picking out somebody for the Gun Channel Blitz, I think. So we'll start off with we'll go backwards here. We'll start with Gary. Final thoughts and plugs and that sort of thing, Gary.
No, I don't know that I have anything to add to the conversation other than thanks for inviting me. And
you bet, man. Gee, what do you got in closing?
Not much. Thanks for the invite.
You bet. Matt?
As ever, thanks for having me, and I really enjoy beef jerky.
There you go. Who doesn't? Right. I mean, come on. Mr. Rick.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate it. As I learned a lot, and I'm not going to be a self-promoting person, so I'll let you choose somebody from the thing. But if anybody wants to send me any gifts, it's my birthday next Wednesday.
Oh, snap.
Nice. I should
get it right before Wednesday for you.
Yeah, nice.
So, I'm glad I sent that, though.
Right. Early birthday present. Sarge, what you got, bud?
Hey, I appreciate the invite. Sorry I was late. I see a new video in the future talking about trigger reset and shooting rhythm, and I appreciate the invite like always. And if anybody can help me out, I'm just a couple shy from 400 subs. Thank you very much.
You bet. Tar, go, buddy.
I just want to say thank you for the invite. Make sure y'all check me out on Tardot357 here on YouTube and Gun Channels and Instagram and Facebook and everything else. And Gunpowder Beauty, she recently hit 100 subs, so we're going to be doing a giveaway with some patches and things through her channel.
Nice. Very nice. Hottie.
Hey, Clover. Thank you for the invite, as usual. I always have fun on your shows. You always put out great information, and it's always a good time. Just only plugs I have is anybody out there who, for some reason, has been living under a rock and doesn't know, you know, gunchannels.com, good place to be. Great community over there. You know, we talk this stuff every night. Other than that, I do a little Instagram thing to Hottie206 on Instagram. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And the Gun Channel Blitz, I'm gonna go with Jelma's suggestion out there, and I'm gonna Gun Channel Blitz. I'm gonna call it on RL Sewer. So go check his stuff out. It's RL space what SUER, I believe. I don't see him out there.
SUEHR.
SUEHR.
Yeah, he's got an H in there for whatever reason.
Okay, there we go. But yeah, go check his stuff out. If you like what you see, obviously click like, sub, do all of that good stuff, and comment in the video. You've been hit or you whatever with the hashtag Gun Channel Blitz. Never Enough Ammo is up here in the next few minutes. He should be going. Not real sure what the conversation there is, but stick around.
Real quick before you close it down.
Yeah, go ahead.
I am going to be self-promoting. I'm 9 shy from 100.
Oh, you're still under 100?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, double Gun Channel Blitz then. Go check out Rick's Life as I See It. And same thing with him. I was looking the other day at a bunch of different channels, and it looked like most everybody had broken 100 already. So, yeah, go, guys, go help Rick out and, get him over that 100.
I haven't.
It's a big thing. Who haven't? Who was that, Matt?
Hey. Okay. I like 60 something.
Well, then we'll do a third gun channel split. So there we go. 50 caliber karma. That's three in one show. You're not gonna. You're not gonna get that. Right. So yeah, we're gonna bail. Tomorrow night is after hours. We're gonna talk thumbnails on the videos. We'll probably do some screen share, and I will probably walk through my technique and method for kind of crafting my thumbnails in Photoshop. Same principles will apply, you know, no matter what program you use. But I think we're gonna play with that a little bit, and then may do some other stuff. Who knows? You never know where that after hour show is gonna end up. So until then, we're out of here, guys. We're gonna go check out again. Never Enough Ammo. Looks like he just went live, as a matter of fact. And we will see you later.